compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I saw a story on Twitter. This is from Pew Research, though the headline is, though a majority hold neutral views, some Americans disagree on whether the declining share of white people in the U.S. is good or bad for society. And that is building on some recent demographic studies that show that the number of white people in this country, at least, is declining. And now I think it's technically in the minority. And my response to that is, I couldn't care less about this story. I don't care. I don't care one bit about this demographic trend. Because who cares about skin color? Why should we care about that? And some people are concerned. Oh, there aren't enough white people. Come on. We're all equal before God. So I'm just going on the record. The stories that are coming out, the reporting that's coming out about the declining number of white people in this country, I could not care less about that. It's a non-issue, if you ask me. And sooner or later, someone's going to ask me, so I might as well tell you right up front. Couldn't care less. Abigail Schreier, we were talking about her a little while ago. She's on Twitter. I just recently started following her, and she sent out a tweet over the weekend. She says, here are forms sent to me by a Chicago public school teacher explicitly requiring teachers to keep kids' newly declared gender identities from their parents. And the postscript to that tweet was, we need legislation now to stop schools from sneaking behind parents' backs to change their minor child's name and gender. I doubt that's going to happen, Abigail. I think it's pretty far gone. Well, let me just read to you some of the memos that were sent. So this first one here, it's called an integrity memo, integrity memo number 11. It's from the Office of Access and Enrollment, Tony T. Howard, Executive Director. This is for Chicago Public Schools. It's addressed to all principals. Tony T. Howard is the Executive Director of the Office of Access and Enrollment. And it's going out to, you know, all the department heads and such, dated, this is December 21st, 2018. So as you can see, this has been around for a while. A couple tidbits from the first page. It says, at CPS, fostering a safe and welcoming environment is our first priority. We also celebrate the diversity of our students, staff, and families. My reaction to that is, really? You really celebrate diversity? I mean, real diversity, where people can have different points of view. Do you celebrate the fact that you've got some staff, some teachers, and even some students who believe in traditional marriage? I mean, that would be part of diversity, wouldn't it? That would be part of, you know, different things and different ideas and people holding different views. That's what I think of when I think of the word diversity. So diversity involves a variety of different opinions. So are you really celebrating that? I kind of don't think so. Another screenshot. You can see all these for yourselves. They're all on the Twitter feed. Cyrus has retweeted this, and you can find it by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. So there's a question, kind of a Q&A section. Question, do I need to get a parent's consent to refer to a student by a different name or pronoun? The answer is no. Parents' guardian's consent is not, and that's all in caps, is not required for students to be addressed by the name and pronouns that correspond to their gender identity. Parents' guardians should not, again, all in caps, be informed of name or pronoun changes unless the student requests such a disclosure. Students shall be permitted to participate in accordance with their gender identity. Now, this is talking about overnight school trips. So students shall be permitted to participate in accordance with their gender identity or in a manner that makes them feel safe, affirmed, and included. I wonder if the kids who believe in traditional marriage feel affirmed. Is there much affirmation for that? I don't know. I'm guessing probably not. Accommodations shall be provided to gender non-binary students and students questioning their gender identity, regardless of whether the student is consistently asserting their identity at school. I'm just thinking this through here. So if you are on an overnight school trip and you are a male, let's say you're in high school and you're going to go on an overnight school trip and the boys are going to be on one floor of the hotel, the girls are going to be on the other floor of the hotel. They're separated by, you know, the binary. I'm reading this to say that if you even just temporarily decide to identify as a girl, then you would be able to spend the night on the overnight school trip in a room with girls. Am I reading this wrong, Cyrus? Am I misunderstanding this? Let me read it to you. You tell me what you think. I'm going to reread it to you because maybe I got this wrong. You vet this, okay? Students shall be permitted to participate in accordance with their gender identity or in a manner that makes them feel safe, affirmed, and included. Accommodations shall be provided to gender non-binary students and students questioning their gender identity. And here's the part that I'm wondering about. Regardless of whether the student is consistently asserting their identity at school. So let's say the guy is, you know, a running back on the high school football team. But for this overnight school trip, even though he doesn't assert a female identity at school, for the sake of the trip, maybe that night he wants to assert a female identity so that he can be housed with the girls. Am I reading this wrong? Is that what it's saying?
That's exact. You don't even have to read. You don't have to read between the lines. It's right there on the page.
Do you think any high school boy would ever try anything like that? Impossible, right?
I have to be quiet just because of what a awful young man I was.
It goes on from there. The principal or designee shall work with the student to determine the accommodations that will be provided, including hotel room and room sharing arrangements based on the particular circumstances of the trip. Accommodations for overnight school trips will be made clear to the student prior to their departure for the trip. Notification of accommodations is not required to either parents or guardians of the transgender student or of those peers. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty far-fetched to imagine that a high school guy might try to work this system such that he could be sharing a room with girls overnight.
It's not far-fetched at all.
I think you're right about that. So there's more, and it's just
unbelievable. Yeah. And then to not call the parents.
Oh, not only not call them, you are not to call them.
That's insane.
Yeah. You're forbidden.
Because I get a call that my 15-year-old, who is girl crazy,
is going on an overnight school trip.
And they're going to ask me, well, and he's saying he's identifying. I'll be, no. He's he's trying to have a
He's working the system.
He's working the system.
Yeah.
So get him back with the guys.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You know, Cyrus, to revisit a topic, it was not yesterday, obviously, but the previous weekend, I was speaking at the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help in Champion, Wisconsin. And one of our delightful listeners, she brought me a roll of duct tape. And I'm glad she did.
That's so great.
I need it. And yeah, so it's, you can never have enough duct tape with stories like this, right?
Oh, man.
All right. 888-914. Thank you.
There you go.
You read my mind. Yeah, because if my head exploded, then you would see my mind. You don't
want to
see
it. Nope.
No. Thank you. Keep it handy. Let's go to Chris in Philadelphia. Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. I just wanted to comment on a woman earlier, unfortunate incident where her son was approaching to receive on the tongue, and hopefully the priest inadvertently and not on purpose dropped the host on the floor.
It was a deacon, but yes, hopefully it was inadvertent.
It's always been my practice whenever this happens, and I've seen it happen in person several times and also on cable, whenever that happens, the priest would always pick the host up off the floor and consume it himself. Or he would set it aside on the paten and then consume it after the mass. So I'm hoping, naturally, you know, that it wasn't done on purpose. And furthermore, that a youngster has the right to receive communion any way he wants, you know, on the tongue or in the hand. But I just wanted to make that comment, Patrick.
Yeah, no, it's a good point, Chris. I agree with you. And if there were some reason to be concerned about contamination or germs or something, the host could also, and this is another thing that's done in those cases where the host would be dissolved in a let's say a bowl of water, and that way it would no longer have the real presence once it no longer has the properties of bread anymore once it's dissolved. That's another way to deal with that. But that's what prompted me, Chris, to raise that terrible possibility, was that well, I don't even want to go back into it again. It was a deacon in this case, not a priest. But the very thought of that happening.
I've never seen the priest, Patrick, ever, when a host falls on the floor, I've never once seen him ever give it back to the communicant. It's the only point I wanted to make.
Yeah, and I concur. I don't think I've seen that either. Typically, they would consume it or they would put it to the side for being taken care of the way I described. Anyway, thank you, Chris. I know you held on a long time. Thank you for that. Let's go to Edgar now in Atlanta. Hi, Edgar.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I have a question about cannabis. I used to suffer from pretty crippling anxiety attacks. And once I was exposed to medicinal cannabis a few years ago, started using it in small quantities, and it was a lifesaver for me. Completely remarkable. I don't have the panic attacks anymore. Within the past year, I've had a dramatic reconversion experience and have come back to, I was already a Catholic and an active parishioner and a tither, but now now I realize I wasn't really a Catholic before, and now I am. It makes any sense. Right. Much more pious. I'm listening to your show now. I'm interested in things like daily mass and confession that I wasn't as interested in before.
That's great.
And I still use cannabis, and I also find it to be helpful. I mean, I use it for the anxiety, but I've noticed not, smoking and then praying, smoking to pray, but I've noticed that it's helped me, remember prayers, focus my prayers. It seems to work as a prayer aid as well as an anxiety relief. And I'm concerned that perhaps I'm violating church teachings and doing this. And that's my question.
Okay,
am I violating church teachings? And yeah, thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. So let's begin by saying that one of the fundamental principles that the church has with regard to moral choices is that in a case of something like this, if you have a legitimate medical reason to seek treatment or medicine or something like that, that you would not thereby be doing something immoral if if this is something that you actually need in order to be healthy. Now, how many people need this and for what things do they need this? I mean, I don't know the answer to that question. I suppose it would go beyond anxiety, but let's say that there were other, I've understood that glaucoma can also be treated with this. And I'm not an expert on this, but those are some things that I've heard. So in that case, if it's something that is legitimately prescribed by a doctor and it's for your health, then you can say that it would not be immoral. On the other hand, there are reasons why smoking marijuana, and when you say cannabis, do you mean marijuana? Are those terms interchangeable in your lexicon?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, it's coming from a, medical dispensary, but it's still, flower from the plant, right?
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that we were speaking about the same thing. So there are other things that are problematic with it, and I've for many years now recommended a book by Jesse Romero. It's called What is Wrong with Marijuana? 50 Questions and Answers. So it's a brief book. Roughly each of the 50 questions and answers is over one or two pages at the most, but it approaches it from a variety of standpoints. So if you're looking for some additional information about what some of the harms are of marijuana, then that would be something to take a look at. But on the face of it, as far as your question is concerned, are you doing anything wrong by taking this as a medical treatment for something that is diagnosed as a problem? No, you're not. I would just be really careful that you don't wind up becoming addicted to it or you don't wind up graduating to worse drugs than that. That would be my qualification. And also read that book. I think you'll find it very informative.
I appreciate it, Patrick. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And you can get it at his website. I don't know if it's on Amazon or not, but Jesse's website is jesseromero.com. You can find it there.
Thank you. I'll look that up.
Okay. Great. Thank you. And I hope you get healthy and stay healthy. Let's go now to Troy where is Troy? San Juan Capistrano. That's where I went to grammar school, San Juan Capistrano, California. Welcome, Troy.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm going to ask my question, just hang up and listen to your answer. Got out of mass and turned on your station and was hearing you talk about this gender dysphoria and the number of genders and all that business. Mm-hmm. And my question was, I told your screener, okay, if I'm having this discussion with somebody and making my point that I don't believe that what you're saying is accurate, and they come back with, why is this bothering you? Why do you care so much? What harm is it doing to you? What harm is it doing to society? What's your answer when it comes to that?
My answer, and you don't have to hang up if you don't want to. It's up to you, Troy. My answer would be, it's not harming me at all in any direct sense, but I'm concerned about the person himself or herself and the harm that comes to them. And one of the ways in which we can point this out is the significantly higher rate of suicide among people in that group, because they're going through, many of them anyway, something very painful, very confusing, very difficult, not to mention the general lack of receptivity on the part of society. Now, that's changing, of course. So heretofore, that was more of an issue than it may be right now. But the potential for even suicide, not to mention other problems that lead up to that, is demonstrable. And so because we care about people, and this is just at kind of a natural level, there's also the supernatural compassion that we should have for people's eternal souls, and we want them to be happy forever in heaven with God. So those are my reasons, not because it's doing anything directly to me, but because it is a dissociation from reality. And when people find themselves in that situation, they need help. They need people to have compassion and love for them and tell them the truth, not to play into that delusion. So that would be my motivation, out of love and compassion.
Only for the individual. Is there any answer that you would give from a societal standpoint?
Well, I can only speak for myself. Maybe I'm not understanding your question, but I can only speak for myself on that issue.
Your answer was spot on in terms of you care for that person, but when it comes to society, is there any negative impact, in your opinion, on how all of this is affecting the bigger picture? You know, the city, the state, more than the individual.
Well, I don't have data to support my hunches, so at best, I can only offer you my hunches. Maybe some of the people like Abigail Schreier are doing work in that area to show what the data indicates. But if I had to extrapolate, I would say that, you know, we would have a corporate downside in terms of the expense for health insurance going up, and the problem of suicides robbing us of productive, good people who could contribute to our culture and our society. And many of them find themselves in a position where suicide is their seemingly only way out. In terms of something that's going to tax our health system with unnecessary surgeries and things of that nature, I mean, if I thought about it long enough, and I must say, I don't think I've ever really thought about it in those terms, so thanks for raising the question, I bet you I could come up with half a dozen significant reasons why it's detrimental to society as a whole, even though it's not directly harming me. I see it as having a detriment. And I guess maybe one thing I'll leave at this would be, is any given society better or worse, or maybe better off or worse off, if a growing majority of people in that society, in that country, deny reality? If they live their lives in a denial of reality, is that better in the long run for a given country or society, or is it worse? I would say, just on the face of it, it would seem to be worse. You want the fewest number of people possible living outside of reality. You want the greatest number possible living according to reality. That's my general take on it. What do you think, Troy?
Yeah, I agree. That's a good answer. Good answer. Thanks, Patrick. I appreciate it.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thank you. Let's see. Yeah, it's time for a break. Let's do that, and we'll come right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show, where the number is always 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Hope restored, hearts healed, lives changed. Here's another relevant radio miracle moment.
Hello, I am so happy to be speaking to you.
Oh, thank you.
It
makes two of us.
I just want to tell you very quickly, I have not been involved in my Catholic faith since I was a young girl. Mm. I am 55, and I came across a radio station, Relevant Radio, while traveling in my car, which I do for work, and I got hooked, especially your show. I listen to it daily, whether I get it live or on podcast.
Awesome.
And I am back in the church, so thank you.
Awesome. Boy, that makes me so happy.
Yeah, thank you.
How did you? You mentioned that you found the radio program. How did you find it? How did you find Relevant Radio?
Oh, I'm one of those people where I'm listening to the radio. I can't find anything that I really like. So I keep hitting that select button. Mm-hmm. And something somebody was saying caught my ear. And I kept it on my radio for days. And I travel. I spend hours in my car every day. And then my 23-year-old daughter must have got in the car and switched it. But I downloaded the app. You know, so now I've got it all the time. I absolutely love it, and I love your show. I love the information I get from your show.
This Miracle Moment was brought to you by you.
Donate now to support the work of Relevant Radio.
We're only able to broadcast because of your generous support. Join our St. Joseph Recurring Gift Society. Recurring gift partners provide a stable source of income for Relevant Radio, helping to reduce both expense and dependency on pledge drives, allowing us to focus on our programs and future needs. Join our St. Joseph Recurring Gift Society today at relevantradio.com or by using the Relevant Radio app, or call 1-877-291-0123. 1-877-291-0123.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Hey, did you hear about the pledge drive results that we had this past week? Amazing. And I want to thank you for your generosity. It was a record-breaking pledge drive in our whole history of Relevant Radio, which is now about 20 years. We've never raised that much money, and our goal was $2.7 million. And as of about, I think it was Saturday evening, the figure stood at just about $3,200,000. And we're just so grateful. And I want to take a moment to say thank you, all of you who participated. There were nearly 15,000 people who participated in this pledge drive, broke the last record that we had. And one of the nice things, at least, I think this is a really nice thing, and that is that Father Rocky made the decision that that our organization would tithe 10% of whatever we made in Pledge Drive. Even if we fell short, we were still going to tithe 10% to the suffering people in Haiti. And so now we're going to be able to send them at least $320,000. That's going to go for food and medicine and shelter after the earthquake, and then what followed with the tropical storm that hit them after that. They're just in a really bad situation, and help is not coming very quickly to them. So this was our way of doing what we could to try to help them. So you did a wonderful thing twice. One is that you helped Relevant Radio, and the other is that you helped the people in Haiti. For all of you who participated, thank you again. May God reward you. And if you're saying, well, I didn't get a chance to do that, well, you still can. The door's still open. If you go to relevantradio.com, you can make your pledge there. You can also do that on the Relevant Radio app, and you can call 877-291-0123. That's a third way you can do it. And we'll count yours toward our pledge of sending the 10% tithe to Haiti. Let's go to Joe now in Passaic, New Jersey. Hi, Joe.
Yes, good morning. A couple things there. First of all, I'd like to thank God, thank Relevant Radio, and thank you for leading me to the Franciscan Friars of Renewal in Paterson, New Jersey.
Oh, you're welcome. Changer. Oh, wonderful. I'm happy.
Second
to hear
of
that.
All, Abigail Schreier has an article in the Imprimis magazine for June and July. It's entitled Gender Ideology Run Amok. Okay. So I was just reading that as you mentioned her name on the radio. Okay. Thirdly, if you wonder where Passaic, New Jersey is, it's 2,183 miles northeast of El Paso driving. Now my question. about 40
what does the last
church.
What does that last tidbit of information mean? I didn't catch that.
That was, I'm sorry, I said, Passaic, New Jersey is 2,183 miles northeast of El Paso driving.
Okay, so I get that part, but what meaning does that have?
Didn't you say your father was born in El Paso?
Oh, yeah, he was. I didn't make the connection.
And you mentioned last time I called, you said, where's Passaic?
I
looked it up and said,
Now I understand.
Question.
Okay.
Okay, sorry about that. About 4 years ago, the church where I was going to I was like the head man there. What do you call them? Factum Toto, something like that. Anyway, we had a new security system put in the church. You know, video cameras all over the place. Mm-hmm. And one morning, we're standing there looking at the monitor for the basement. No reason in particular. Just happened to look up. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. And there's no lights in the basement. It's all infrared stuff. Suddenly, out of nowhere, this white bulbous object started floating around the table. So I said to the sergeant, look at that. What the heck could that be? We had no idea. So I videotaped it. Mm-hmm. And I ran downstairs right away, and I was looking around. There were no lights on. There were no fans on. There was nothing in there. So I didn't know what to think of it. So I sent the film out to one of these guys who claimed they're a Ghostbuster. And the first thing they normally do is they look at the film to see if there's any chicanery involved, you know, mm-hmm. if you did anything to audit the film. And he couldn't find a darn thing wrong with it. And now I'm not saying I agree with him, but as from his perspective as a Ghostbuster, for lack of better terminology, he says it looks like you have an actual appearance of a ghost. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, what does the Catholic Church teach about appearances of ghosts? Now, I had some thoughts myself. You ever see the movie Scrooge in the beginning where he opens the window and he sees all those dead people flying around the chains and all that?
That was Bill Murray, right?
No. This was the old one, Alistair Sims, I think.
Oh, no, I never
I think
saw
they used it in all, in various different ways. Anyway, when he opened the windows, they were all there flying around with chains around their necks and crying and moaning about their lives. Mm-hmm. Now, I had one thought that it might possibly be a soul from purgatory appearing, asking for prayers. Is that mm-hmm. possible?
Yeah, very possible. So building on that, Joe, what the church says, the church doesn't have a teaching per se. There's no like dogmatic definition on this issue. But what the church does teach with regard to the four last things, death, judgment, heaven, and hell, would be part of my answer to your question. So the reality or the phenomenon, let's put it that way, of ghosts, whatever the ghosts may be, could be one of three things. Well, let's say maybe one of four possible things, but more likely one of three. The first would be it could be a demonic manifestation, and that a demon is doing this to scare people, what have you. Another option is that this is, as you said, a manifestation of a soul in purgatory in its own way, trying to ask for prayer. And then the third option would be that it is a damned soul that is also appearing by God's permission. And keep in mind that these phenomena only happen if God permits it to happen. So if it's, and we're not talking here about the demons because they do stuff on their own, but in the case of a soul in purgatory, or even in hell for that matter, or even in heaven, and that was the fourth option, if God permits the soul to manifest in a way that we can understand in this life, in the case of the soul in purgatory, to ask for prayers, God can do that. And there are whole books written on the topic. One book is called Hungry Souls, and it's true stories of souls who have come back from purgatory to warn people and also to ask for prayers. There's another book on hell, The Dogma of Hell, by F.X. Schupp, S-C-H-O-U-P-P-E. He probably pronounced it differently, but that book includes a great number of stories of cases where the souls of the damned were permitted to appear, and they had a ghostly appearance to them, a frightening ghostly appearance, and they were sent to warn people. And then also, of course, it could be a soul in heaven who doesn't need prayer and yet is sent by God as a way to warn people, to guide people. That's also a possibility. So I would say those, outside of some other phenomenon that could be explained scientifically, if we rule out the scientific explanation for something, then it seems that those are the four things that are left, and the church
right,
would
say. Right, then the one biblical, okay. There's one biblical verse that I have problems with then. It says to be absent from the body is to be with the Lord.
But
how
it doesn't
would
say
that.
That
mm-hmm. Okay,
which passage
me,
are you?
Please, I'm sorry.
Well, which passage are you thinking about?
It just came to my head. I thought I read it somewhere. To be absent from the body is to be with the Lord. Maybe I have that wrong.
Well, yeah, that's the way it's commonly okay. quoted. So let's go to it.
Okay,
so 2 Corinthians 5, verse 8
okay.
is now. There are okay. two different ones, but that's the one that you're more likely to hear. So if you okay. read that, it says he says we are confident and willing to, and rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. So let me read this to you in the Revised Standard Version, which will give you a better version. So the Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition says, let me go to that here so I can quote it in that version. So there it says, we are of good courage, and we would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. Now, this is a commonly misquoted passage, and it's misquoted to say to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. But that's not what he's saying.
Okay.
He's just saying, I would rather be absent from the body and present with the Lord.
Gotcha. Different interpretation then. Yeah. Well, thank you for correcting me on that.
Well, I'm not here to correct, but I'm glad I could elucidate and enlighten. Well, thank you, Joe. And now I know the distance between Passaic, New Jersey, and El Paso, Texas. I learned something today. Let's go to Julie in Sacramento. Good morning, Julie.
Hi, Patrick. My question is, I have some relatives on my husband's side that are Christian, Protestant, but at some point in their lives, some ongoing, some briefly, they were involved in Freemasonry, Eastern Star, that sort of thing. So when I went to a funeral, there's been three of these relatives so far. They would have it in the church or maybe outside at the graveyard service, and they would have the preacher, and then somebody would just walk up with a big bouquet of these, this star-shaped flower arrangement or something. Okay. And go through this sort of like a presentation on, I don't know exactly, but whatever it is they do for funerals, but like the Freemason part. Mm-hmm. And the first time it happened, I was just in shock because it was in a church and I didn't know what to do. And then it happened a couple other times. And the last time was just last year with a relative, and there was nowhere to go because it was outside and it was at the grave site. And it just felt so uncomfortable, like, and it kind of made me mad. So I just started praying to St. Michael, but I was like, yes,
this was in a Catholic church, you say?
It was not in a Catholic church. I think the first couple were like a Lutheran church, maybe. And then the last one was just like, because of COVID and everything, was outdoor, just at the graveyard service with their
And so it was something Masonic? Is that what you mean?
Yes. So it was some representatives from their Masonic lodge that came up, and they had, you know how they have like a wreath of flowers? Well, this one was like shaped like the star. And they went through all the points of the Freemasonry and stuff, after the preacher spoke.
I wouldn't be bothered by it. I mean, okay, I didn't phrase that right. I wouldn't like it, and I wouldn't, I'd be like, oh, come on. But there's really not much you can do about it. And if you're there for the burial and just to see somebody, to pay respects to that person, you just have to grin and bear it. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything that was, that affected you. You just happened to be present when something Masonic was done. But I wouldn't let it bother you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. I just want to make sure that I was,
sure,
it was okay, because I have a feeling that might not be the last time that this happens. So.
Yeah. And if somebody is a Mason, a Freemason, chances are they will have those things done at their funerals. But what can you do? It's
okay.
It's kind of an unavoidable situation, it sounds like to me. Was this somebody that you knew? Was this a relative?
Yes, they were my husband's grandparents and another close relative.
I see. So it's appropriate to go and pay your respects. It's appropriate to be there with the family and be there for the burial if possible. So even if something like that is done, it's unfortunate. You wish it weren't there, but you can't really do anything about it. So I would just grin and bear it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate the phone call, and thanks for listening. 888-914-9149. Now let's go to Kathy in St. Paul, Minnesota. Good morning, Kathy.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about the gender dysphoria problem.
Yeah.
I recently spoke at our local school board meeting. Now, this is Roseville. With four other people speaking about the problem with gender dysphoria.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new principal at our local grade school who's come out very strongly in favor of all of these approving people's gender pronouns, whatever they call it. I, in particular, spoke about from a place of a person who had been abused as a child. I was the fourth daughter of to a man who didn't like women, and how I, as a very young child, before I even started school, wanted to be a boy and really acted that part. And what would that look like if I was a child in the same age going to that school, having this man confirm basically what was a charade, and yet I was seeking help. So this was the sort of stuff we brought up to the school board. We asked them to not confirm any sort of gender dysphoria until it was thoroughly checked out.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just wanted to speak from that angle of what's going on to our children.
Yeah, yeah, it's everywhere. Now, did your representation of what happened to you when you were a kid, did that cut any ice with these people? Did they care one way or the other?
Well, we have asked for a response from them.
I thought you gave them this message in person at a meeting. Did I misunderstand?
Yeah.
So what was their reaction in the moment?
Well, in the moment, they're looking very concerned and they're taking notes, but we asked for responses and we haven't heard back yet. I guess it takes a couple weeks.
Yeah,
but we are hoping to put a stop to this craziness.
Yeah. Do your best. Speak the truth in love. Keep pushing forward.
That's right.
Yeah. What else can you do?
And pray.
That's right. Well, Kathy, thank you. It's nice to talk to you. Well, let's see. Let's go now to Kathleen. No, I take that back. Kathleen, stand by. I jumped the gun. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk to Kathleen and everyone else in quick order right after this quick timeout. Come over here. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
This is The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
All right, now Kathleen in San Luis Obispo, I can go to you. Welcome aboard.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question for you regarding yoga.
Okay.
So there is a DVD series out called Soul Core, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And it's someone who does yoga exercises, but you're praying the rosary and I think like the Divine Mercy Chaplet. There's different DVDs for the different, sets of mysteries and whatnot.
Okay.
And I was wondering, is this
acceptable? Is it okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so this always is a contentious topic.
Like the website.
Mm-hmm. The issue of yoga is always a contentious topic. So I'll start there by saying, I think many people in the West don't recognize that yoga is actually part of Hinduism. It's a religious practice. In Hinduism, it's a religious practice. And there are countless people in the United States for whom it has nothing to do with religion. It's simply a stretching exercise or a breathing exercise or, to get your body in shape kind of exercise. So I recognize that the average person practicing yoga in the United States does not intend any kind of a religious connection with it. Nonetheless, yoga is a religious practice per se. And in fact, if I've mentioned this on the air before, if you go to the Indian government's website, you'll find, just as we have here in the United States, we have the Department of the Treasury, Department of Education, Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Defense. They have all those same things. They also have a Department of Yoga. So they have a cabinet level Department of Yoga under the current president, Modi, because he is very much a promoter of Hinduism. I'm sorry. Well, he is a promoter of Hinduism, but also a promoter of yoga. And in that section in the Indian government's website, they point out, you know, that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but many people don't recognize that this is a religious practice, and we want to make sure people live healthy lives and, you know, achieve great fulfillment, and this is a way to do that. So this preamble is intended to say there's much more to yoga than meets the eye, and certainly the people who practice yoga as a form of exercise, I don't fault them. I don't say that you're doing something contrary to your Christianity, because I don't think they realize that. So my suggestion would be, get a book by Max Scully. It's S-C-U-L-L-E-Y, Max Scully. It's called Yoga, Tai Chi, and Reiki, A Guide for Christians. And so he gets into this. I'll share with you a section of this book, Kathleen, because I think it gets to the heart of your question here. He says, many open popular magazines look at the notice board at many gyms or even notice boards at many workplaces. And I believe he's Australian, so a notice board would be a sign that offer health advice to staff, and yoga is prominently promoted. The practice has become so fashionable that even many top-level professional football clubs are getting involved and talking enthusiastically about the positive benefits. Years ago, it became the fashion in top-level football circles to gain that extra edge in positive thinking. All sorts of claims were made for hypnotism, etc. He says the fashion soon faded. The interesting feature common to both hypnosis and yoga meditation is that they both involve altered states of consciousness. Just as a reminder, I was recommending to that caller about a book called Yoga, Tai Chi, Reiki, A Guide for Christians by Max Scully. It's a very helpful book. It'll give you a calm overview, and I think you'll find it helpful. Thank you for that call, Kathleen. Let's go to Karen in Temecula now. Good morning, Karen.
Hi, Patrick. I grew up in the 60s, and sex was never talked about in the family or explained or anything.
Let me interrupt you and just say, if that's the topic of your question, then parents, I want to give you fair warning. If it's not a topic that's suitable for your children to hear, turn the radio down for a few minutes, okay? I want to make sure that we protect the little guys. Ready, steady, go. Okay, go ahead, Karen. And please be discreet in how you ask me the question.
Yes. And so it was never talked about in the, you know, as kids or being good or bad. It just always seemed like it was bad. So getting married, you know, still thinking there's something wrong, it's bad, until I went to a Bible study and a priest just said something, and it just seemed like it was for me. He said, sex between a husband and a wife was beautiful. And that was the first time I heard that. And then, I seem to be okay for a while, but I still fight the feeling that I'm doing something bad. Okay. And adding to that, and that's that part, is the oral sex. I'm not sure if that's bad between a husband and wife.
Okay.
And that's my question.
Okay, fair enough. So the priest is absolutely correct, Karen. Remember that God ordained this as one of the goods of marriage between a man and a woman. And so it's not only good, but it's also intended by God to be enjoyed by the couple. And the primary end of the Marriage Act, sexual intercourse, is the procreation of children. But obviously, children aren't procreated each time. So the church recognizes that this has a twofold purpose. The primary purpose or end is procreation. The secondary and also very important purpose is the unity of the husband and the wife, the deepening of their friendship, all of those things that accrue to a married couple when they renew the marriage covenant in this physical way. So it is good. And if you are in a lawful marriage, then it is good. Now, the thing to keep in mind here, and I think this gets to your second question, and that is that there is the danger of hedonism, which we should be careful of, because hedonism would be a form of gluttony, if you want to think of it that way, where food is necessary to keep you alive, but you can sin if you go too far and you have too much food, or, you know, various forms of gluttony can take place. And the same is true analogously in the case of a married couple, where if there's an inordinate pleasure seeking going on, and even if it's, and especially rather, if it's an emphasis on the pleasure as opposed to the love between the husband and the wife, which should be primary, then that can get into the area of sin. But just the act itself is certainly not sinful for a lawfully married couple. Now, as to the second part of your question, the answer is that the marriage act itself, and you understand what I mean when I say the marriage act, right? You know what that means?
Yes.
Okay. So the marriage act is only lawful when it is completed in a way, in the natural way, that would make it possible for the transmission of life. It would make it possible for procreation. It doesn't mean that you have to procreate. It doesn't mean that you will procreate. It just means that you cannot complete the marriage act in a way that would frustrate that goal, you see. So if the marriage act is, in essence, really distorted or made use of in a way that does not end in that way, it's not completed in that way, then that would be a serious sin, regardless of what anyone may tell you. That would be a serious sin. Now, all the more so if it's intentional. Now, if the couple is unaware of this and they just don't know, then their culpability can be mitigated. But in itself, as an objective thing, it would be a serious sin. Now, an addendum to that. All those things in themselves that would contribute to the perfection of the act. And by perfection, I don't mean making it as good as possible. What I mean is the completion of the act. If there are things that can, and I'll leave them unnamed, that contribute to the perfection of the act so that it is completed in that way, those would be permissible. Those would be okay for a married couple to make use of. Nothing that would be in itself either denigrating or humiliating or against nature, and think closely about that. Things that would be against nature, things that would be denigrating or humiliating or anything like that, those would not be acceptable, morally speaking, for a married couple. But yet those things that I will leave unnamed that do contribute to the completion of the act and the perfection of the act, those are permitted. So as a general, you know, general boundaries, just remember that if the act ends in a way that's not, that doesn't tend toward procreation, then that would be a serious sin, which I think is the nature of your second part of the question. Does that make sense?
Thank you. I understand.
Okay. Yeah, it's an important topic that is not often discussed. And as you can see, we have to discuss it in a careful way when we discuss it on radio like this.
And it's been very hard that not to be able to talk to people just because of that.
Right.
To bring it up. For me, it's been that. It's been hard.
I understand. And hopefully my answer to your question gives you a clear answer that you can now know, so that on the one hand, you avoid those things that would be sinful, but on the other hand, you recognize that this is something good and pleasing to God. So think about that too, that when the married couple engages in the marriage act, it is pleasing to God. It actually glorifies God when it is done in a good and upright and holy way. It's a very good thing, and God ordained it to be enjoyed. So you never have to worry that you're doing that in itself. It's anything that is improper or sinful. As long as you don't go about it in an improper and sinful way, you have nothing whatsoever to worry about.
All right. Thank you, Patrick,
You're
very
welcome.
Much for explaining that.
You're welcome, Karen. Thank you. I don't think we have time. I was just about to jump into another call, and I realized we don't have time. So all of you who are holding right now, I apologize for not being able to take your call. Call me tomorrow, and we'll get you on the air with your comment or question. It'll be the same phone number tomorrow between 8 and 11 Central Time right here on Relevant Radio. Well, until then, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.